This is Reagan on the line.
Radio.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ass to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Tell them this, tell them this, tell them this.
No way. No matter.
My website is up now at www.
www.soundoffforums.com.net.info, and it's 3 F's for those who are asking. If you'd like to call in and ask questions tonight, or call in and say sound off after she gets offline, you can call in at 347-989-1014. And we'll kick it off with Ephesians 6:6-13, as we always do. Not with eye service as man pleases, but as the servants of Christ, doing the wills of God from the heart, with good wills doing service as the Lord, and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good things any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether it be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of the persons with him. Finally, my brothers, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness and wickedness of high places. Wherefore, take on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, and having all done to stand, and let the church say, Amen. Hello, Ms. Reagan.
Hey, good evening.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm just peachy. Excuse my voice. I'm just getting over some laryngitis, so I can talk, but it's a little scratchy.
That's okay. I'm just glad that you're online.
I'm glad
I won't push you too hard then. Okay, could you please introduce yourself to my audience, please?
Sure. My name is Reagan Chastain, and I am a professional speaker and writer. I'm a competitive dancer at the professional level, and what I speak about is self-esteem, body image, and health at every size, which is the idea that healthy habits and not body size are the best path to health, with the understanding, of course, that health is multidimensional, not entirely within our control, and that we get to prioritize it however we choose.
Awesome. Earlier this week, we had a young lady, her name is Alicia, and she was talking about fitness and movement, that she was doing Zumba and putting classes and stuff on. So that's, you know, it's falling right in line with that kind of thing. Can you give a little bit more of detail exactly what do you do for the community?
Absolutely. So I have a blog. I actually sort of came at this backwards. I wanted to be a ballroom dancer, and I don't know why, but some level of naivete, I honestly thought that the fact that I was fat wouldn't be a big deal, but it turned out that it was. So I wanted to be a fat dancer, and it turned out I had to be a fat activist to kind of get that done. And so when I realized that was how it was going to go down, I started my blog, which is called Dances with Fat. It's at www.danceswithfat.org, just kind of talk about my journey as a dancer who doesn't have the body size that people expect. And so from that blog, I ended up sort of growing an entire activist practice. I do a lot of speaking, and I have to do a lot of writing, you know, about self-esteem, about body image, about the science of weight and health. I'm a trained researcher. That's what I went to school for. And so I also came to Health at Every Size sort of backwards. I was researching to find the best diet. I wanted to find, you know, the diet that has the absolute best track record of success. And what I found going through, you know, hundreds of hours of research was that no such diet existed. There wasn't a diet that had more than a tiny fraction of people succeeding. And so I came upon Health at Every Size, which was the evidence-based idea that healthy habits are the best option to pursue a healthy body, which now seems kind of like a big flaming sack of duh. But at the time, it was completely shocking. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. And so I speak, I write. I also do some projects in the community. Last year, there was a group called Children's Healthcare of Atlanta that put up a billboard campaign of, like, it was fat kids sort of poorly dressed and looking sad, and with slogans like, it's hard to be a little girl when you're not, or being fat takes the fun out of being a kid. And I was so appalled that I asked, you know, my blog and the community, you know, if you guys want to put up a billboard or, you know, do something about this. And so we raised $21,000 in 8 days, and we put up our own billboard and bus shelter campaign asking people to stop weight bullying and to consider help for kids of all sizes. And so sort of projects like that that I do, I write for NBC's iVillage on their body image and Women's Health Blogger. So does that answer your question?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's a plethora of information. So
yes.
So when you write about self-imaging, and I also talked about that earlier last week, what could you say to the young girls who find themselves in a situation that feel unloved because of their size?
I think what we've got to do is be honest and say that the world is messed up when it comes to body image and health and weight. It's messed up. And, I mean, medical science can be wrong, and it's been wrong before. I consider this kind of a Galileo issue because, you know, Galileo is just a dude with a telescope who's saying, look, I understand everybody thinks that this is true, but the fact is the evidence doesn't support it. And that's exactly what's happening with weight and health. And so we're being pushed from all sides that the only path to thinness is weight loss, when in fact there's no proof that weight loss makes people thinner long term. Like, there's literally no research on that, which is kind of mind blowing. And then there's no proof that we can get people to lose weight, even if it did make them healthier. And so I think that what we have to tell girls is sort of the same thing we have to tell them about our, you know, single stereotype of beauty, which is that the world is messed up, and that's sort of the world you're inheriting. I'm sorry about that, but you need to make a decision. Are you going to buy into it, or are you going to do something else? You know, are you going to start to make a change and, you know, be willing to see that the world is screwed up and we can fix it, but it's going to take work?
What? Can you explain a little bit about your dancing?
Sure. I am a 3-time national champion ballroom dancer. And I moved recently from Austin to Los Angeles, and in my move, I lost both my coach and my partner, and so I sort of semi-retired. Maybe I'll go back, who knows. But I decided to start a group here in Los Angeles, and so I founded Moore Cabaret, and what we are is a professional dance troupe that does sort of cabaret dancing, so all kinds of different styles from jazz to Broadway to kind of sexy cabaret, with a professional technique, and it's an entirely plus-size troupe. I wanted to put bodies that we don't often get to see out on stage and show that, you know, talent comes in all sizes and, you know, dance is for everybody.
Well, I definitely get that. I can't do my dance moves as good as I used to. I put on a little weight, but, you know. I'm just so excited to have you on because it's people like you that help promote the truth about what statistics say and then what reality says. And so for people like you who promote being big is beautiful and being big, you can still be eloquent and light on your feet, even though that you are a big woman, that big woman or a big man, the misconception is that's not true. And I'm glad that you have put this together in order for people to understand what you're doing, one, and two, to get people to kind of like change their mind the way they see people, instead of their first, you know, they say, you know, the first time you meet a person is, you know, is by the book, or, you know, don't judge the book by its cover, and you shouldn't. So, I mean, nobody would probably look at you and say, oh, you know, you're a 3-time ballroom dancer. But
oh, no, that game, 2 truths and a lie, I always win that game.
I'm just looking, I'm sorry, but I'm looking at your Facebook picture of you doing a split.
Oh, yeah.
That is the most significant thing I've ever seen, and I love it. I just completely love it. I want you to know that. That's an awesome picture. I hope you never take it down.
Thank you. That photo shoot was for the website adapositivity.com. She takes positive pictures of fat bodies. It was actually on Wall Street in New York City at lunchtime. And so we're doing all these poses, and I'm like doing a standing heel stretch and back bends over the thing, over the fence under the water, and these splits. And like these people from Wall Street are just standing there kind of eating their sandwiches and staring at us, like not sure what to do. It was really fun. It was a good time.
Are you gonna try to do that nationally, or, I mean, like with your dancing, or are you promoting of your, you said you're a speaker. Do you do any motivational speaking to, like, teens or anything?
I do a lot of speaking. Most of my speaking is to corporations and to colleges. Like, I just got back from a four-college tour in Western Massachusetts where I was at Amherst and Mount Holyoke and Smith and University of Massachusetts. I was at Dartmouth a couple weeks before that. It was the second time I got to go to Dartmouth. Super beautiful campus, really awesome people at both places. I spoke at Google headquarters a few months ago, so most of my speaking is not to teens, but it's to slightly older people, sort of college age, and then to corporations that are looking at new ways to do wellness besides just trying to tell all their employees to lose weight.
I know this is kind of like a little bit off the subject, but it kind of it's close to the subject. Did you hear about, and I didn't catch her name, but the CEO of Google, of Yahoo, she does not agree with people working from home. Now, I know this, like I said, it's kind of straying from the subject, but it's kind of on the subject. Would you say that promotion of people who work from home does not create an atmosphere of laziness, or does it create an atmosphere of laziness?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I'm oddly qualified. Before I did this, my job for my career for 16 years was as a business operations consultant. So this is something I've actually looked into. And I think there are some good studies that show that people do well from home and are more productive in the home environment. But the truth is there are always going to be people who take advantage of it. And there are lots of controls you can sort of put in. I think her point wasn't so much that people wouldn't work as hard as that she felt like it created more of a team to be in the same building. And that's an interesting thing. Culture is such a sort of corporate buzzword right now, and everybody talks about how their corporate culture is. And I think that what she's going for is that if we're all in the same room, if we're all looking at each other, if we're all interacting physically every day, it helps us bond as a team, and that helps us to be more productive overall, whether or not people would sort of take advantage of the opportunities to work from home. So I think that's kind of where she was going with that, but that's just my guess.
Right. And so it leads me into this question. When we talk about people working from home, some people who are bigger or larger may have a disability where they can't go out of the home. Could we promote that type of working from home atmosphere and create a buzz around that, saying that people who do want to work, who are immobile or because of other, you know, medical reasons or anything, they are still doing what they can to help society?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer in reasonable accommodations for employees of all sizes for all different kinds of reasons. I think that the more we can help people to be comfortable and have a work environment that works for them and their particular needs, the more productive they're going to be, the happier they're going to be. And so if someone is, you know, has trouble with mobility, whether, you know, whatever size they're at, I think creating a situation where they can work from home and don't have to struggle every day if it's really difficult for them to get transportation and then to get into the office and then maybe it's hard for them to be mobile around the office, I would absolutely suggest that that's something that a company looks into. I think to sacrifice, you know, brilliant minds because they don't fit in the, like, stereotypical able body that people expect them to is a tremendous disservice to the business.
Wow, that's awesome. Can you talk about your size for success of success?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. Can you repeat that question?
All right. Can you talk about your business size of success?
Sure, size for success. So it's sort of the blog is sort of the personal side of me, and I blog almost every day and kind of talk about my personal journey. Size for Success is my professional company, and that's where that's the company that I use to market my public speaking, that I use to market a lot of my writing and that kind of work. And what I wanted to do was create a company around consulting, because as I said, I'm sort of once a consultant, always a consultant. You can't really, like, get it out of your blood, this desire to solve problems for companies. It gets into you, and then you just can't stop. And so I really wanted to help companies look at specifically workplace wellness and the idea that encouraging employees to either hate the bodies they have or to undergo, you know, health interventions so that they don't look like employees who are fat you know, is not particularly motivational, is not working. The sort of carrot and the stick idea where, oh, we'll give you better benefits if you're thin. There's tons of research that shows that that's a really bad idea. And so there are really good interventions to go in and talk about workplace wellness where we don't have to talk about employees' body size at all. And so I wanted to sort of give that a name and a face, and that's where the company originally came from. And then as I started to do more sort of both motivational and informational speaking, that sort of all fell under that umbrella.
Do you also talk to companies about insurance, about the size? Because, you know, as you know, that some women are men who are what they consider to be morbidly obese is, of course, a disease, and they are not afforded the same opportunity of health care. Do you talk about that type of things to corporations and schools?
I do, and I'm pretty intimately knowledgeable about that because I am too fat to be insured. Now that I moved to California, I have some more options because they have sort of a they're rolling out a version of Obamacare ahead of time to kind of see how it goes. And so I have that option now that I've moved, but in Texas I did not have options for insurance. And so one of the things I talk about is the idea of mistaking body size for diagnosis, right? The idea that I can say, I can look at you fully clothed and based on your body size, I can say you're diseased. And that's problematic in and of itself. And more problematic is the idea that, you know, the solution is that everybody needs to be the same height and weight ratio, right? So if you're this size, you have to lose weight, despite the fact that we have absolutely no reason to believe that's possible for more than a tiny fraction of people based on the evidence. And so when I talk about this, what I talk about is that we can encourage healthy habits for people of all sizes without shaming and stigmatizing people of any size. There's really good research out of Columbia by Peter Muenig where he found that women who were concerned about their weight had more mental and physical illnesses than women who were okay with their size regardless of their size. And he also found that the stress of being stigmatized long-term, as fat people are in our culture, was correlated with the same diseases with which obesity is correlated. And so it's possible that a lot of the, you know, so-called obesity-related health issues are actually shame-related and stigma-related health issues. And so there's more to that than just saying fat is bad, thin is good. If you make a fat person thin, they'll be healthier. That's just not supported by the evidence.
And do you find that when you're talking to these people that are in positions, do you find them to be receptive to that, or do you find them to kind of say, I listen to what you're saying, but I still don't like the fact that somebody's that's big in an executive position?
Yeah, it's interesting. Often they start out pretty hostile or at least pretty closed off to the idea. And I present my case through evidence. And, you know, here's this study and here's this study and here's this study. And if you disagree with me, that's okay, but please produce some evidence to support your opinion, which typically people can't do. And so I'm not trying to be combative. What I think we all have to understand is that we've been grossly misinformed. And the diet industry makes $60 billion a year. And they make that despite the fact that they've lost so many lawsuits brought upon them by the Federal Trade Commission for deceptive trade practices that they're actually required to have a disclaimer on their ads that says that their product does not work. And so in order to make $60 billion a year selling a product that every time you advertise it, you have to say doesn't work, you have to have some pretty good marketing. Because who's going to buy a product where you're like, buy my thing, it doesn't work? Well, no, I'm not going to buy that, right? But the diet industry continues to be able to sell us these products despite the fact that they have zero track record of success and, in fact, have been sued successfully repeatedly for deceptive trade practices for saying that their product works. And so that marketing, you know, $60 billion a year by some creative marketing minds, and that marketing has been used to misinform all of us. And so I don't go in. When I go to speak with a group, I'm not being combative. I'm saying, you know, have you considered this evidence? Are you aware that this whole other paradigm exists? You know, a lot of my work I'm never really trying to tell anybody how to live. A lot of my work is about just letting people know about the options. It's not, I don't meet a lot of people who are like, nope, I have carefully considered the evidence for health at every size, and I just don't think it stands up to evidence. Most people have never heard of it or never looked at the evidence at all. They're just, you know, kind of going with that everybody knows idea. Like, everybody knows that fat is bad. Everybody knows that weight loss is healthy. Everybody knows that weight loss is possible. And so my work typically is not, I think people are expecting me to be combative, and that's not my style. I'm just presenting options and presenting evidence and letting people really kind of logic themselves through it.
And I think that's very, very awesome how you do it when you present facts, and then you tell them, well, if you don't believe in my facts, then when do you have facts and what do you believe? How do we go about, in your opinion, I know it's only your opinion, how do you think we go about combating those type of ideologies about what fat people can do and what they can't do?
I think the thing that we really have to do is look at the half century of research that we have on weight loss and admit that even if you believe weight loss is going to make people healthier, we literally don't know how to get it done. It's like saying, well, if you have bad knees, it would be helpful if you could fly. Right? That's true. Flying would take the pressure off of your knees. But we don't tell people to go home, jump off their garage, and flap their arms as hard as they can, because we have no reason to believe that that will be successful.
Right.
There's only about a 5% better chance of losing weight than there is of flying if you jump off of your garage. That's not a big difference. Right? And so what I think we need to do is take weight out of the conversation altogether. Is stop and say, all right, look, we've created an entire public health system that's about making fat people's health the public's business instead of providing health options for everybody in the public. And so it's time to stop stereotyping and stigmatizing people based on body size. It's time to focus on the fact that there aren't separate healthy behaviors for fat people. I find it really interesting, for example, that most people are told, oh, you want to eat slow foods, you want to eat whole foods, you know, farm to table as much as possible. But fat people are encouraged to join Nutrisystem and get highly processed food that comes in a baggie to be microwaved.
Right.
And the idea that that's healthy for a fat person, but everybody else should, like, start with some squash and, you know, or chicken and make dinner is ridiculous to me and defies logic. The idea that, oh, you know, everybody else should eat whole foods, but fat people should drink 5 reconstituted soy protein shakes a day and that's healthy for them is, the logic is not there. The idea that if people are thin by any means necessary, it's better than being fat. Like, if that were true, we would just hand out cocaine to fat people.
Right.
It's pretty hard to maintain high body weight on cocaine. But at some level, at least, we realize that thin by any means necessary is not the same thing as being healthy. And so I think that healthy habits are good for all people. You know, the idea that, you know, we need to single out fat kids is ludicrous and absolutely goes against the evidence that we have. It shows that kids who are put on diets have a higher tendency to have eating disorders and a higher tendency to be fat, but do not have a higher tendency to be normal weight adults. You know, the hospitalizations for kids under 12 with eating disorders are up 119% since we started focusing on the weight of kids about a decade. 119% hospitalizations for kids under 12 who have eating disorders. And that should tell us we're headed down the wrong road. And I think that the problem we're experiencing is that while we're aware that science can be wrong, I mean, I'm, you know, a trained researcher, the first thing you have to admit is always that you could be wrong. Right? And we've done bad things for health. We used to prescribe heroin as a non-addictive substitute for morphine. Right? Obviously, that was a bad call.
Right.
But what we're missing here is the ability to say, wow, we've been really wrong about this and we need to do something else. And I think that ultimately, at the end of the day, is what needs to happen in order for us to have a true conversation about public health. And we can remove weight from the conversation and have a complete conversation about public health without ever bringing up anybody's body size. And I think when we start doing that, we'll start to see actual improvements in public health.
Okay, so I got everything that you said, and you actually wowed me for something that I should have known, but I didn't know, and that's awesome because I like to be wowed. But you definitely hit on the right key when you said that it is a nation health problem, and we have to address it and have real dialogue. That the truth, I'm trying not to reiterate what you said, but it's just so profound what you said that we're not really having dialogue about health and what's causing us to fail at making our children healthy. You said that fat people get these bag or frozen stuff when they tell you to eat, you know, stuff from farms and leafy vegetables and stuff like that. And that to me is just so profound because I'm thinking of it because all the women that I've ever dated, because I've always been a BBW lover, have always tried to diet and use that frozen stuff rather than actually eating healthy. So, I'm trying to get back in the conversation because
it is. I mean, it's really like if a thin person went to the doctor and they were like, all right, what do you eat? And they're like, I eat 100% frozen meals. The doctor would be like, yeah, stop doing that. You got to cook something, wash and chop something, have a carrot, have a vegetable, right? But if they're a fat person, the doctor's like, what are you eating? And I say, I eat mostly whole foods, slow foods. I cook mostly food from scratch. And they're like, yeah, stop doing that. You got to go on this program where you eat all frozen packaged food. That's insane.
And that is so true. I mean, like I said, it's so profound. I didn't think it like that. So, I mean, that's a meatball right there. because you said it's a national health issue. So what I think it was Monday. I think we had this conversation about that. Yeah, it was Monday. Some people say that they find big people either gross or appalling.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the mindset that we need to change, or do we need to change it on a higher level? Because I think when people say they find fat people appalling, I think they're talking from a physical sense rather than what they can do to help the person lose weight.
Well, there are a couple of things here to deal with. The first one is that if you find people appalling because of a single physical characteristic, we have a word for that, and that word is bigotry. And so you're a common bigot. Is the beginning and end of that. And, like, you know, somebody who is a common bigot gets to choose how they deal with that. But, like, let's not call it anything other than what it is.
Right.
It's not like, oh, evolutionary biology says that I can't, you know, that I have to deal this way. But no. You're simply a bigot, and that's how that goes.
Right.
The idea that what we tend to tell fat people in this society is you are, you know, as a fat person, you're subjected to a tremendous amount of bigotry and stigma and bullying and oppression. And the solution to that is for you to lose weight, right? And so essentially what we tell people is that the solution to social stigma is weight loss. And the solution to bullying is to give the bully your lunch money and hope that he stops beating you up, right? Which never really works. I mean, if we learn anything on the schoolyard, it's that giving the bully your lunch money just makes the bully want more stuff from you. And
right.
So the solution to social stigma is not weight loss. The solution to social stigma is ending social stigma. And so when we blame fat people for their stigmatization and tell them that the way for them to solve that is to lose weight, we're working the absolute wrong end of the problem. The problem is people who stigmatize fat people. It's not fat people. The rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are inalienable. They're not size contingent. They're not health contingent. They're not weight contingent.
Right.
And so size acceptance, the civil rights movement of size acceptance, is not saying, oh, you know, won't you please give us our civil rights, because those aren't somebody else's to confer. Size acceptance says, please stop trying to take away my civil rights through an inappropriate use of privilege and power.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that's what it, you know, for somebody to say, oh, well, I just, you know, fat people just gross me out. Well, you know, there are a number of other cardinal directions in which you could look to solve that problem. I do not have to change myself to meet your aesthetic desires. And that goes, that's not just fat people, that's sort of all the way through, you know, society for both men and women, where it's suggested that, you know, whether or not we're heterosexual, we should comport ourselves so that we are sexually attractive to someone else.
Correct.
And that should be our main goal. You know, that if, you know, if guys don't want to have sex with you, there's something wrong with me because I don't meet the societal stereotype of beauty. And that's a really dangerous way to sort of live our lives and to think about beauty and attractiveness. And so, yeah, I think it's simple bigotry, and I think that absolutely needs to stop. And you know, instead, the government sort of encourages it, right? They say, we're having a war on obesity. And incidentally, you can't have a war on obesity without having a war on fat people. Like, you can't,
right?
You can't have a war on my fat, but love the thin person you open underneath it. It doesn't work out that way.
Right.
And so when the government says that their goal is to eradicate everybody who looks like me, including me, whether I like it or not, that's not exactly encouraging brotherly love. You know
right.
what I'm saying? So I think that's the key point.
Right. And then it's a self-image thing. I mean, if they're saying, well, you know, there's a war out on terrorists, and then everybody who is supposed to look like the terrorists, then the kind of people are very afraid of them. So if the government says that we're having a war on obesity, and if you're fat, then you have every right to look at the person who is fat a way that seems like they're second-class citizens or are different.
Absolutely. And regardless of what the evidence says, I mean, the Congressional Budget Office did an analysis and found that healthcare for fat people wasn't even putting a dent in the national healthcare costs because most of them have to do with administrative fees and almost none of them have to do with actual healthcare. And despite that, you know, we're still being told that essentially fat people are causing the end of days because we just cost so much money in healthcare. We're just, you know, we use more gas. It's sort of a confirmation bias run wild where people are like, right, fat people are bad. Let's set out to prove how bad they are. And
did
then,
you say
you know,
that
whatever,
people use gas?
Oh, dear God. Yeah, these people did a study, and it was reported everywhere that, like, fat people cost, you know, billions of dollars in extra gas because we're heavier. Now, when doing this study, I got reported in major New York Times, major newspapers, and I was like, I went and read the study, and first of all, they used driving patterns from 1960. Second of all, they didn't have information such as how many fat people have cars. What kind of cars do fat people have? Do they tend to have fat passengers or thin passengers? Like, all of that information, they just essentially, you know, excuse my inelegance, but it was numbers by rectal pole. Is the only way that I can describe that research. But it got reported as true. What they also didn't report was that we could save 3 times as much gas as they suggested fat people use if we just kept our tires properly inflated. Right? But instead of saying this represents less than 1% of all gas usage, they used the number because it seemed like a really big number, like so many millions of gallons of gas. But it ended up being like less than 1%. But that happens all the time. The standards that the media have for reporting studies are incredibly low and even lower when it comes to studies about fat people because everybody loves to read about how fat people are, you know, making everything horrible. And so we get all of these studies, and that, again, encourages people to look at people come up to me on the street, the people who do not know me, to say things like, I'm sick of my tax dollars paying for your diabetes. And I'm like, whoa, dude, even if I had diabetes, this would be totally inappropriate.
No doubt.
Right?
Wait. Somebody said to you, I'm tired of fat people, so I'm tired of paying for your diabetes.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh, my.
It's not
ignorant. Where do these people come from? Where do they get these statistics? Where do they get these facts?
Yeah, they get them from the media that reports these crazy studies like they're true and from the government that's perpetuating the myth. I mean, it's a dangerous, dangerous thing, this whole idea that, you know, we should have a war against a group of people based on how they look. Like, let's think about that. How well has that gone in the past? Is this a good idea? No.
No.
Anytime you single out a group of people based on how they look and then try to calculate their cost on society, you're absolutely going down a bad road. And, like, the fact that we haven't learned that lesson yet is just unbelievable to me.
Right. It's mind-baffling. That's the government for it. So... God, you've got me all wound up. I don't don't know how long you can stay on the phone, but I would love to have you back on if that's possible. But
anytime.
Okay, so yeah, I want you to talk more about the I want you to talk more about when you go into the colleges or the corporations, and kind of, do you have like a certain strategy that you use when you talk to them? What are the facts that you bring to them, and on what level? And I shouldn't say this about these people, because they should be, I guess, highly intelligent, I guess you could say, but their ignorance is more, like you say, more bigotry than anything. So are you speaking to them on a professional? I mean, you start off, I'm sure, professional, but then do you find yourself cutting down the bigotry as you go or move along?
Yeah, I think, I mean, my sort of presentation style is a combination of humor and hard facts.
Reagan, I'm sorry. Can you hold on for a second? We have a caller.
Sure, of course. Oh, awesome.
I'm sorry, we have a caller. Okay, so you know what that means, y'all. Caller, can you say your name, where you're from?
Don, Texas.
Okay, do you have a question for Reagan?
Yes.
Oh, okay, Reagan, you got a question.
All right, I'm ready.
Hi. So, I went to your webpage, and I also found your link that sent people off to your blog full of all your hateful comments that you received.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, like, how long did it take you for that to not bother you? Because I receive hate mail also. Like, you know, they'll send me some and say, well, you're a disgusting pig. When's the last time you've seen your feet? You know, or if it's, you know, they'll just look at different pictures of me in a chair or something and, you know, make comments about, you know, that the chair has to be reinforced and all that. And I don't reply back to them because I know that that's what they want me to do. But at the same time, I mean, it still kind of hurts my feelings. I mean, how long did it take? I mean, does it still bother you?
So, first of all, I'm really sorry that you have to deal with that. It's complete BS. Nobody should be treated like that. The sort of run-of-the-mill comments no longer hurt my feelings, like, oh, you're a land whale, blah, blah. Mostly I'm just like, why a land whale? Like, there are fat animals on land. We don't got to go make it up
an
animal.
I read that one.
Call me an elephant. That drives me crazy, right? Land whale. I don't get it. But I can get my feelings hurt, but what I have to remember is that, you know, these people are coming from a place of bigotry, and they've clearly got issues if they've decided to spend their time, you know, sending hate mail to a complete stranger.
Mm-hmm.
The roughest one that ever sort of happened to me was that 10 different, they're supposed to be about bodybuilding or fitness, but they do a lot of fat hate stuff, websites decided to coordinate an attack on me. And so in 24 hours, I got 30,000 hits and 5,000 comments.
Wow.
And their main focus was in the comments to tell me that I should kill myself. It's got, you know, a good 3,000-4,000 comments that told me I should kill myself. And at the beginning, like, it was really jarring because it just wasn't right. You know, like, I open up my computer and then I have 400 comments. And that's not – I get a good amount of comments, but not 400. But anytime I get that many, I know there's something wrong. And it was just, like, relentless. And so what I decided to do was just delete them. And I didn't say anything about it on the blog. I didn't say anything about it anywhere. And so at the end of the day, it was like it never happened. Like, they had nothing to show for all this work that they had done. And that sort of, I think that was sort of, like, the trial by fire that helped me sort of get over a lot of the impact that it has on me, because it was, like, it became so obvious over the course of those comments that this was not about me. You know, I was an unfortunate bystander to their issues, and they were sort of trying to take their issues out on me and make them mine, but I don't have to accept that. And so I was like, no, you can keep these. Like, I want a Wii for Christmas, not your BS. And so that really ultimately helped, although it was a difficult day or so to get through. But it also, you know, they would, people started to get really angry. Like, they'd send me, you know, you can't keep my comments off your page. So I'm like, Kevin did.
Yeah.
So it sort of gave me an opportunity to feel a little bit of power within that situation and to feel a little bit centered in that situation. But I think, you know, it can catch you off guard. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it hurting your feelings. Like, it's engineered to hurt your feelings, that they're trying mm-hmm. to make you feel bad about yourself, which if they actually cared about your health, they wouldn't do.
Right.
People don't take care of things that they hate, and that includes their bodies. And so trying to make somebody hate their body as a way to make them healthier, it defies all logic and all of the evidence that exists. And so, you know, it's bigotry and it's, you know, a microaggression
mm-hmm.
under, and trying to hide it as, you know, concern for health or being about health is just thinly veiling your bigotry and aggression. So I don't know if that helps. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, you know, like, I did the same thing, you know, I mean, because mine was, it was on Twitter, I'm not sure where yours was, and it was kind of the same thing. There was kind of a group of people, and they all just bombarded me with a bunch of stuff, and then were taking pictures and retweeting them, and none of them were even my friends, so I did, you know, they were retweeting pictures and making comments and telling everybody to retweet them and show everybody how disgusting this pig is and blah, blah, blah. You know, and so I just went and, you know, I mean, you know, I blocked them all, so none of the stuff that they put on my page showed, and none of the stuff they took of mine showed, and all that stuff. But still, it was just kind of like, dang, I mean, I just sign on here, and I've been, and there was 15 comments on there, you know, which is nothing compared to what you had. But, I mean, still, it was just like, I haven't really had that a whole lot, and so, I mean, I was proud of myself for not responding because I really wanted to just tell them off and tell them what idiots and assholes they are. But I just didn't even give them the satisfaction of knowing that they got under my skin.
Yeah, and I don't think it really helped. I mean, my hope generally is that if somebody's, you know, posting a link to my blog with a picture of, you know, my head superimposed on a whale, at least they're posting a link to my blog. Right, and maybe somebody who comes along with that reads the blog and gets something out of it that's helpful. Like, that's the best I can hope for, because these people are not okay, and I, you know, at some level, I pity them, but I have no capability to help them, so I can just not harm them further and, like, let them go and do their thing and hope that they bring, you know, people to my blog who I can help or that something good happens out of it. Yeah, I'm sorry you have to deal with that. It sucks.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, thank you for your opinion and everything, your advice.
Awesome, thanks for calling in, Don.
Bye.
Bye.
Reagan, by the way, that's my wife.
Oh, awesome.
She supports my show.
Cool beans. That's some good wifing right there. That's very cool.
Yeah, you know, your voice is getting better and stronger as you talk.
Yeah, I keep having to mute it to have coughing fits, but after each coughing fit, my voice is better. So this is going good. I'm happy.
Awesome. So I'm going to, I guess, prime you back to the question I asked before the caller called in. And so the question was, is there a strategy that you go in with your statistics and everything, or do you find later on you're just fighting bigotry rather than actually showing them the facts and the details?
So I have my sort of basic approach is a combination of humor and hard facts. So I kind of use, you know, humor to diffuse the situation, to make it a little bit easier for people to listen, to show them I'm not being combative. And then basically what I do is I use as little of my time as possible to just lay out the basic facts of my case based on evidence. So I'm like, here is the evidence that shows that fitness creates similar health outcomes regardless of body size. So, like, Matheson et al., Weigh et al., Cooper's two longitudinal studies all showed that habits were a much better determinant of future health than body size. So I do some graphs. I talk about the evidence that shows that we just don't know how to get people to lose weight. Like, we just don't have any evidence of any intervention that's successful. And so I kind of go through just a very evidence-based presentation. And then the real work, I think, happens during the Q&A. So essentially my goal is to kind of blow people's minds a little bit, to present a case that they probably haven't heard, show them the evidence, and then to say, all right, ask me anything you want. And I always say, you know, you can't offend me unless you're trying really hard, which I don't recommend because I do this for a living. You can ask me anything you want, you know, no matter how awkward the phrasing, just ask. And that's when I think people really start to experience changes, because they're, you know, they're asking me these questions, and I'm just saying, you know, I hear that you have a different opinion. Do you have some evidence to back it up?
And they probably say, that you, well, not right now, but I can get back with you. They say that.
Sorry, say that one more time. I was having a whole coughing thing happen.
That's okay. I said, do they usually say, I don't have evidence on me right now, but I'll get back with you?
Sometimes, and I'm like, I absolutely welcome that conversation. I mean, I'm a researcher. Of course I could be wrong. I have to be willing to admit that. But what I challenge them is, are you willing to admit that you might be wrong?
Right.
Interestingly, the least well-behaved audiences that I have are often medical professionals. You know, like I speak in front of, at universities, I often am asked to speak to the staff who provide medical care to the students, to talk about how to give appropriate medical care to students of size, and they're usually pretty cool. But if I speak to groups of doctors, that's when they just can't seem to behave. The only time anyone has ever just screamed in the middle of my presentation, it was a doctor. You know, I'm going through and I'm talking about the evidence and I'm citing my sources and I've got graphs and everything, and I just hear out of the audience somebody yell, lies! And I was like, who said that? Raise your hand. Like, we're going to address this right now. You know, but it's so ingrained, and I think it's really hard, especially for medical professionals, to be like, holy crap, I have no evidence basis for what I've been doing. You know, in my own doctor's appointments, when they say, oh, I need to lose weight to be healthy, I say, do you find that to be an evidence-based medical practice? And they say yes. And I say, okay, can you provide me with the evidence basis? And frighteningly often, their response is to say, okay, well, how about you only lose this amount of weight? And I'm like, what the hell? Do I need to lose 100 pounds or 50 pounds? Is this completely arbitrary to you? And again, where is your evidence that that's possible for me? And so I think that because we sort of abandoned evidence-based medicine in our pursuit of fitness, it's really hard for doctors to walk that back. But yeah, in presentations, I typically, you know, I'm pretty... I don't get super emotionally involved. Like, I'm not, you know, overwrought. I'm just like, these are the facts as I understand them. I'm a researcher. I spent hundreds of hours doing this, and I'm willing to have a conversation, but we're going to have to do better than saying everybody knows blah, blah, blah. You're going to have to be able to defend with evidence what you're saying.
And then when you say that to them, what do they reply with?
So pretty often, the argument that almost always comes up is, well, everybody knows that obesity is correlated with a bunch of diseases, right? Which, although it's true, is misleading. Correlation means that two things happen at the same time. Causation means we can tell that one thing, in fact, causes the other to happen. And so the foundation of research science is that correlation never, ever, never, ever, never, ever implies causation, right? And the way I explain it is this. Most times in August, there are more ice cream is eaten in August and more murders happen in August. But I can't say that if I take ice cream off the shelves, the murder rate will go down.
Correct. Right?
Because I don't know the causation. All I know is these two things happen at the same time. So one might cause the other. Like maybe people eat ice cream and then they become murderous, or maybe people after they murder someone on a Sunday. I don't know. But we don't have that information. And so it's also possible that they're caused by a third common thing. So like maybe it gets hot in August, and when people are hot they get cranky and they either eat ice cream or they murder people. And if that's the case, if I took the ice cream off the shelves, assuming that would make the murder rate go down, I could actually make the murder rate go up. And that's what happens when you don't understand causality, but you just assume that, well, if these two things happen at the same time, then I can assume this thing causes this thing. And that's what happens with obesity and disease. People at higher body weights, without any sort of healthy habits, higher body weight is correlated to more diseases. Now, once people are practicing healthy habits, higher body weight has the same health hazard ratio and health outcomes as a thinner body. And that's something that they don't tell us a lot, but there is a ton of data on that.
Okay, can you explain that? that part one more time? Because I'm trying to catch what you said about that, and then tell us about the data.
Sure. So Matheson et al. Is a study that looked at four healthy habits. If people practiced zero healthy habits, then the health hazard ratio, negative health outcomes of fat people was greater than that of thin people. But once they practiced, once all three different sizes, normal weight, overweight, and obese were practicing just one healthy habit, the disparity changed quite a bit. So now fat people only had, you know, about 25% more negative health outcomes. Once they were practicing all four healthy habits, it did not matter what their body size was. Everybody had the same health hazard ratio. And those findings were repeated in Way et al. And also the Cooper Institute Longitudinal Study, which is the largest data bank in the world with the most variables when it comes to fitness and health. And so Stephen Blair, who works at the Cooper Institute, he summed it up by saying, "We've studied this from many angles in women and in men, and the answer we find is always that it's not the obesity, it's the fitness." Right? And so study after study after study says that people who practice healthy habits have relatively similar health outcome ratios regardless of their size.
Right. And that's what we talked about on Monday, saying that fat people can still be fit, and fat people can still be fit even though they appear to be overweight. And would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that one of the problems is that we're talking about is that we put body size into that conversation at all. Right? As if, you know, it does a disservice when we use weight as sort of a proxy for health. We do a disservice to fat people by telling them that that healthy habits don't help them unless those habits make them thinner, which is not true. But we do a disservice to thin people as well, who are told that they're healthy by virtue of their size and regardless of their habits, which is also not true.
Correct.
Right? So eating junk food and being sedentary is not, like, healthy for you if it doesn't make you fat. That's not how that works.
Right?
And so, you know, putting body size into the health conversation inserts a middleman where a middleman does not need to be. You know, people get to prioritize health however they want to. And another interesting thing is that we glorify a lot of ways that people do not prioritize their health, right? We love a sex, drug, and rock and roller. You know, a bad boy rock star. We love that. We love X Games athletes and people who do Ironmans and people who jump out of helicopters wearing skis and people who stay up all night and don't get enough sleep. None of those things prioritize people's health.
Right.
But the idea that we've chosen – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing with you.
Yeah, so like the idea that, oh, well, I'm just worried about fat people. Like, I am self-righteous about fat people because they're not prioritizing their health. Like, unless you're following people around and yelling at them for not looking both ways before they cross the street, you're just thinly veiling your bigotry about size. You know, people don't get enough sleep, but we don't have a war on night owls.
We sure don't. We have midnight shows and midnight snacks for that.
Yeah, and 24-hour restaurants, and, like, you know, there's something cool about that to people. And so it's really interesting to me that we're very happy to glorify a lot of ways that people choose not to prioritize their health, which is their choice. I have no judgment about that. Like, drink like a fish, smoke like a chimney, like, it's your body. Do whatever. You get to pick. My interest is that people have true information to work off of, and we're not getting that with you know, with this whole weight and health are the same thing. Like, nobody's getting correct information. You know, the idea that you can do whatever you want as long as it doesn't make you fat and you'll be healthy is ludicrous.
Right.
But that's the message that we give thin people, and that's dangerous.
Can you elaborate on the Kylie, what did you just say? The part about how people don't prioritize their health. I'm not sure if you have any background in that, but can you kind of explain that to my audience, how they should prioritize based off the information that you have received in your endeavors?
Sure. So first of all, I want to be clear that I think the prioritization of health is an intensely personal decision. I don't think anybody owes anybody else healthy by any definition. right? Each of us get to choose how important health is to us and what path we're going to take to get there. And I think when we think that that isn't the case, it becomes a very slippery slope because everybody seems to think that everyone else should be about as healthy as they are, right? So if somebody runs 3 days a week and eats mostly whole foods, they tend to think that that's what everybody else should do. But people who are raw foods, vegans, and run marathons are crazy, right? And so there becomes this thing where it's sort of like driving, where everybody who drives slower than you is an idiot and everybody who drives faster than you is a maniac, but you're exactly right. That is what happens when we try to police other people's health, right? Everybody
right.
who is, quote-unquote, less healthy than you needs to do better, but everyone else who does more, you know, for their health than you do is just crazy. They're overdoing it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, if you want to tell somebody else to be healthy, you need to be, you know, prepared for someone else to tell you
right.
how to be healthy, right? Because everybody, no matter what you do, there's somebody who thinks that their path is better than your path. And so I think that we need to stop thinking that it's somebody's job to tell everybody how to be healthy. Most of the research shows that the absolute best thing people can do for their health is get about 30 minutes of moderate movement about 5 days a week. So that's 150 total minutes of movement a week. And people can break it up into 10-minute bits or even 5-minute bits. So you can break it up. Right? And when I say moderate movement, I mean something that's enough to kind of get your heart rate up so that you can sort of talk but you can't sing. Like sort of that level of exertion. But people have had tremendous health benefits from just going from no movement to 1 hour a week, right? Not 150 minutes, just 1 hour. And so, but movement seems to be sort of the single best thing. And there's a great YouTube video called 23 and a half hours where a doctor kind of talks about this and the different benefits. But for, like, people to get to find some kind of movement that they enjoy, because it doesn't have to be, we get this idea that, like, you have to be punishing yourself at the gym, and if you're not miserable, then you're not really exercising, and, you know, people are scarred from the president's physical fitness test, and they have gym class PTSD, and so sort of getting over all that, you know, can mean that people find something they like to do, whether it's Dance Central on their Kinect, or the Wii Fit, or dancing around their living room, or gardening, like, whatever it takes, to find something that people like is the greatest impact that you can have. Sort of the next thing was, like, don't smoke. You know, drink only in moderation. Matheson et al., the four habits they studied were not smoking, drinking in moderation, movement, and then getting 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And so people who did all four of those things had the same health out. You know, obese people who did all four of those things had the same health outcomes as thin people who did all four of those things and dramatically better health outcomes than thin people who didn't do any of them. So... does that make sense?
Yes. I just need you to repeat the three things that you just said. I'm sorry.
Oh, sure.
You said
it was,
there were three.
There are four habits. The first one is not smoking. The second one is drinking in moderation. The third was movement, right? Getting near 30 minutes 5 days a week. And the fourth was 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day.
Now, when you say drinking in moderation, is that water?
No, alcohol. Drinking alcohol in moderation.
So drinking alcohol is okay, but not really okay, is what you're saying.
They found that if people drank in moderation, it was fine. I mean, it's not so fine a point that I can say, like, it's this many drinks is the deal, but... not drinking to excess, not drinking to get drunk, proved to have health benefits.
And that would definitely help the individual.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to be a little healthier, you know, it's the research shows if they move a little more, if they eat a couple more servings of vegetables a day, that's going to have pretty dramatic health benefits. And the problem is, it's not going to change their body size. They're not going to lose weight. And if they do lose weight, the likelihood of them gaining it back within 5 years is almost a certainty. And so it makes it incredibly problematic to use weight loss as a gauge of success of healthy habits. They'd be much better off to take, like, a simple blood panel and see their cholesterol and glucose and triglycerides and then, you know, move a little more, eat a few more vegetables, then in a couple months take another blood panel and see if they've had any changes. Like, that would be a much more useful measure. With the understanding, of course, that even those measurements are affected by things out of our control, like heredity and our environment, stress level, that kind of thing. But using weight loss means that people start these healthy habits, but they don't lose weight, so they think that the healthy habits aren't working, so they stop. And that's a tragedy.
Okay, so what period of time would you, I mean, I know you can't really suggest, but from your opinion or from your over the time you've been doing this, how long should they give themselves as far as a long-term goal or short-term goal to see if it really is taking effect? Or should they just go off their lab work?
I would say, you know, kind of, you can go off the lab work, you can go off, you know, kind of how you feel. You know, if people are into journaling, they can kind of keep a journal of how they feel before and after they start the interventions. They can judge their strength, stamina, and flexibility. Like, those are really worthy goals. You know, can you walk a little farther than you could last week? Can you pick up a gallon of milk a little easier than you could when you started? Those kind of things.
Right.
I also think goal-oriented fitness is something that a lot of people, it helps a lot of people to pursue fitness in a way that makes sense. So, like, do they just want to be able to pick up their grandchild, or do they want to be able to walk a 5K? Like, picking a goal that they're really interested in and then coming up with a program to kind of get to that goal can be really helpful, as opposed to just arbitrarily feeling like I'm just walking for no reason right now, you know?
And that's, and I get that point. There was a question I was going to ask, but I think I'm going to ask this question and kind of it has to do with the film industry. And I'm not sure if you want to comment or not. You don't have to. Just say that you'd rather talk about something else. But my question would be the way that Hollywood portrays big women or big men in films and are on TV. I know it's not a positive, but is there a way that we can make a positive out of the negative of what they show?
I think so. There's a story, I can't get the actress's name. She played Uhura in Star Trek. Do you remember her name?
Yeah. You're talking about the black lady, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember her name.
I don't remember her name. She was at a dinner with Martin Luther King Jr. And she was telling him that she was going to quit the show because her role was stupid and degrading. And, you know, all she did was, you know, repeat what the computer said and say a couple lines. And Dr. King told her, look, you know, there are little girls who look up to you, who you are the only person they see who looks like them on television. So I would urge you to stay on the show. And I think about that a lot. I don't ever compare oppressions. I think, like, I have no interest in playing the oppression Olympics, but that I'm inspired by that, you know, there are fat little girls who at least are seeing someone who looks like them, even if the portrayal is not the best. You know, we saw that in a lot of the way that queer people were portrayed in the media, you know, and now finally we're getting, like, characters with depth, and they're not just, like, the super happy best friend who loves window treatments. They're an actual character with some thought, and I think that sort of it's unfortunate that fat characters are portrayed as walking stereotypes, just like it's unfortunate that queer characters were portrayed or characters of color were portrayed as walking stereotypes. But I think that there's something to be said for at least having someone who looks like me on screen.
I forgot her first name, but her last name is McCarthy, the lady who plays Mindy.
Melissa McCarthy.
Yes. I'm not sure if you saw that article. It was on the internet, but she was in an interview before this, and I read it. And she says that she's ashamed of her weight, and she's battling her weight, but she's working on it. And then the article that came out maybe 4 weeks ago, right before her movie premiered or during her movie premiere, this writer wrote that she should be ashamed of herself because she's so obese, and there's no way she should be on the movie screen. And I wonder why, my question is I wonder why people didn't, and when I say people, I'm talking about the fat community, did not make an uproar about that.
I know we're not talking about. I saw Rex Reed's thing where he was just a complete jerk in his review of her film. I think that there's this idea that gets floated around, and it happens a lot. Like, I've been in a couple magazines, and there's been a lot of pushback having me because of this idea that if we show a fat person as anything other than the butt of a joke or a tragic character, we're somehow, quote-unquote, promoting obesity. Right, okay. So, like, Kelly Knighting is a guy who weighs 400 pounds and ran two marathons. He is the Guinness Book of World Records holder for the largest marathoner. But people were like, no, don't put him in sports magazines because it promotes obesity. Like, somebody was going to say, I want to be able to run a marathon. I guess first I have to weigh 400 pounds. I just don't think people are that stupid. I don't think it's possible to promote a body size in that way. But it's a purposeful goal to make sure that fat people have no positive role models who look like them. And so we get this artificial idea that all fat people are miserable. They're all, you know, unhappy. They don't find love. They're, you know, they all want to lose weight. And it's an unrealistic portrayal of fat people, but it's purposeful because, you know, we're afraid that if fat people have role models who look like them, they won't hate themselves enough to buy a weight loss product that has never worked in, you know, 100 years of trying. So I think that's really dangerous. And I think, too, one of the things that is sad to me is a lot of actresses who are fat will start off saying, no, I'm happy with my body, I'm proud of my size, and then, you know, once they get bigger and they're looking for a big role, they say, you know, oh, I'm, you know, I'm ashamed of my size, I want to change it, I'm working on it, whatever. And they're certainly, they can make any choice they want, it's their body. But I do think that sometimes it has to do with trying to be a quote-unquote good fatty. Right, so people will lay off them if they're like, no, I'm trying to lose weight. Then at least they can get a little bit of wiggle room. Like Oprah did a lot of that. Like she launched the careers of how many quote unquote diet gurus? None of them, and she's still fat. Right, we gotta now all of us gotta listen to Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz and the whatever diet and all these damn books, and she is still fat. Like what the hell? Right, but she used that throughout her career to get people off her back by, you know, constantly going and making these tearful confessions. I can't believe I got fat again. I have no willpower. I can't lay off the fried chicken. Like, I mean, she literally stood on TV and was like, I just can't lay off fried chicken. Like, holy crap. One of the most powerful women in the world, and, like, this is what you want to talk about? You can't give up. So eat the damn chicken. Who cares?
All right.
Why is this a thing? You know, people are dying of cancer. Nobody cares about your chicken.
Right.
But we get this idea that, you know, the only way that fat women can be okay or accepted is if they promise that they're trying to lose weight and they are self-deprecating and they are, you know, willing to make these tearful confessions about how, yes, I'm a horrible person, but I'm working on it, and please, like, allow me to do this thing I'm talented at. Which, but, like, how different would our world be if we chose our actors based on their ability to act instead of on their ability to meet a stereotype of beauty?
Right.
I'm not going to name names, but some people would not be famous. You know, would auto-tune exist if we picked our singers based on their ability to sing?
Oh, my goodness. Come on now.
I mean, we've created an entire industry, the entire goal of which is to make someone who can't carry a tune in a bucket sound like they can sing because they're pretty. There are people who can sing. You know, and then when fat people go on, like, I know people mean well, but every time some fatty goes on to, you know, American Idol and sings well, everybody's like, I was so shocked. Why the hell were you shocked? Like, talented fat people are not actually shocking.
Right.
There's nothing shocking. When Susan Boyle walks on stage, I have no reason to make any judgment about whether or not she can sing. I have no information about that based on her walking on stage.
Right.
Right, when the fat guy who in Britain, he's, I think, a plumber or something, and he has this amazing opera voice, I have no information about how he can sing based on his body size. That is ridiculous.
Right.
But because we choose actors, singers, dancers, comedians, everybody, based on their ability to meet a stereotype of beauty, we begin to think that's okay.
On the notion that 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 the, what the movie portrayed. I mean, because that's very what you said about Aurora. I wish I knew her name, but that was very powerful. I've never heard that story before, so I'm going to have to look that up. But that I mean, that's very powerful because I'm a firm believer in that. I can understand that, but I'm about action and change, and so I'm okay with the fact that they can do that to a certain point. But like you said, who cares if Oprah ate fried chicken? It doesn't really matter, you know. Where do we get to the point where we say I'm happy who I am? Can we ever get to that point?
Well, and when it's, you know, can I please be judged on my talent and what I'm trying to do instead of how I look? You know, the skin and the beauty we have is absolutely arbitrary. My mom joined the Peace Corps a few years ago and went to Kaimali, West Africa, and there the standard of beauty is that the larger you are, the more attractive you are. And so I'm like a regulation hottie supermodel in Kaimali, West Africa. You know, and
is your mother plus size?
No, my mom's thin.
Okay, well, I'm just asking because she would have came home and have tribal beads or something, be married to one of those men out there.
No, but I'll tell you what she did do. My mom, you have to understand, my mom is awesome, but also crazy in a cute way. She sold me while she was there for air conditioners.
Stop it.
For real. I got a letter. It was like, first you have to understand it's very hot here. It was 120 degrees today. And I'm like, well, that sucks, but you're dumbass with Africa. Like, oh, sorry. And then she said, next you have to understand that the highest price ever paid for bride was one air conditioner. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me, because I know my mother is a crazy person. And so the next line is, I have sold you for two air conditioners. You'll be the first person. You won't have many duties. And if you don't, you know, come to be his wife, then I will give the air conditioners back. I'm like, what in the hell? And then she came home.
She sold you for air conditioners. Oh, my God. That's funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, she came home to the airport, and I was like, don't touch me, you sold me. And she was like, it was twice the price of a princess. Like, my mom is completely pragmatic in that way. Still doesn't understand why it was upsetting to me.
I'm sorry for laughing. I really am. I'm sorry for laughing. But that is a funny story.
And, I mean, and obviously that story is problematic on any number of levels with regards to sort of how white people are viewed in Africa and there are many problems, but what it did show me really clearly was that the standard of beauty is completely arbitrary. If here and now I'm seen as unhealthy, unattractive, like the worst, and basically the boogeyman in America, right? But if I can get on a plane in a few hours, I'm considered the healthiest woman, the most beautiful woman. Like, that's damn arbitrary.
Very. I'm sorry. I'm still laughing about it. So did your mother give back the air conditioners?
She did give back the air conditioners before she came home. So, but the guy still will email her and be like, what of your daughter? Does she not have need of my services? Like, no, I really don't have need of your services, sweetheart. I'm sorry.
That's a great story. Okay, so I'm going to stop laughing. I'm gonna say this comment. I was talking to a lady, and I think she's a very pretty lady, and she has a nice shape. And she said to me, she's like, you know, we eat healthy in my house, and I'm trying to lose weight. We don't eat any red meat. We eat, you know, all green vegetables, and we don't eat a lot of starches and stuff like this. And she's telling me her diet, and then she says, well, I am a sucker for sweets and beer. So of course, right there, I knew that, you know, it's gonna be kind of hard for her, but. Where I'm going with this is she wants to lose weight, and she's, like you said, she's eating like she's supposed to, but she can't change her figure. She can't change her dimensions because, you know, I guess because maybe the lack of exercise, or maybe there might be more to her physiology than she thinks. So do you think genetics have a lot to do with it, or do you think that's just something that people use?
No, there are studies that show that weight is about as heritable as height. There are really, really interesting twin studies where they take identical twins and they overfeed them to see what will happen. And within the genetically identical twins, their reactions to the overfeeding are very similar, like how much weight they gain and how fast they lose it. But between the sets of twins where people are not genetically identical, there are vast differences.
Uh-huh.
Some of them, you can overfeed them till the cows come home and they just don't gain much weight. And as soon as you stop overfeeding, they lose it. Some of them, you start overfeeding and they gain a ton of weight, much more than you would expect for the number of calories they're taking in. And it's almost impossible for them to lose it regardless of what they do after they're overfed. And so there's a lot more to it, I think, which is why I go back to saying, like, every study we have, you know, says, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm going to cough.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm probably going to have to get off in a second. This is becoming a bigger deal, this coughing thing. But, I mean, every study we have says that if you're fat, you're probably always going to be fat, right? No matter what you do with your diet and exercise, almost everybody within 5 years comes back to where they were. And so, you know, again, using weight as a measure of success of eating or exercise or anything is a really bad idea. And
correct.
So I think that if health is something you're interested in, all of the research says the same thing, which is you practice healthy habits and you let your body weight settle where it is and you understand that health is not entirely within your control, right? And I think that one of the best things we could do is start to create a culture of blame-free, future-oriented healthcare, right? So if you have lung cancer, it doesn't matter if you smoked or not. Like, the opportunity for that is over. So instead of making people feel guilty because they smoked and got lung cancer, like, let's have just treat the lung cancer, right? Because once you have lung cancer, they recommend you don't smoke. And whether that means quitting smoking or not starting smoking, it doesn't really make any difference. It's about, this is where you are with your health. What are you going to do in the future?
Right.
Right. And so trying to figure out, like, oh, you have type 2 diabetes. Well, is that because of that you're fat? Like, what difference does it make? Somebody has type 2 diabetes, they've got type 2 diabetes. What are the evidence-based interventions that we can get people? Like, there are no fat people diseases. Thin people get all the same diseases as fat people. And so being thin can neither be a sure preventative nor a sure cure.
Right.
And we have interventions that don't involve weight loss, because when thin people go with type 2 diabetes, they don't tell them to lose weight, right? They have interventions. And so if we treated everybody with evidence-based medicine instead of just diagnosing people as fat and prescribing weight loss, that people wouldn't be so worried about, like, I need to get healthy, I can't lose weight.
Correct. Well, I thank you very much for your time. You were very informative. I had so much fun. I apologize to keep on that long, because I know you're kind of sick. So, but you can give a couple nuggets for my audience out there if you choose to, like, for a couple seconds. And just tell them maybe something that you have a motto or something like that that you would like to share, or a quick story or something, and then, you know, that'll be it.
Sure. I would say this. The thing that changed my life the most was the day that I realized that I had spent so much time hating my body for how it looked that I hadn't had a single bit of gratitude for what it did for me, breathing, blinking, heartbeat, all of those things. And so everybody has abilities and everybody has disabilities and your body is your own. It's one of a kind. It's not comparable to anybody else's body. And so, you know, having some gratitude for our bodies and how amazing they are and all the things they do for us can be really powerful and really start to shift the way that we feel about ourselves and our bodies and our relationship there. And so I would suggest that people out there are not feeling good about themselves, they're not sure what to do to feel better, get out a piece of paper and make a list of all the things your body does for you: breathing, blinking, heartbeat, waste elimination, waving, smiling, hugging, kissing, everything you can think of, and become conscious of your thoughts about your body. And every time you have a negative thought, replace it with any positive thought, right? So if it's like, I don't like this body part, you can replace that with, but thank you for breathing. I really appreciate the great job you're doing breathing. You're really, like, kicking ass at that. And so you know, begin to develop that gratitude for your body. That is, you know, if people are struggling, I'd say that to me was the first step and still is the most profound thing I've ever done, you know, for myself and my self-esteem and body image, was to develop gratitude for my body, for everything that it did for me, instead of being, you know, pissed at it because it just won't fit a completely arbitrary stereotype of beauty that has nothing to do with reality anyway.
Well, thank you. I could chew on that all day. That was great. Thank you, Ms. Reagan. I appreciate this. Taking your time to come on the radio show and putting out, like I said, a plethora of information, because the people who haven't listened to it, they will listen to it. They are going to enjoy it. Believe me, I have great listeners. So, like I said, you're welcome, more than welcome to come back anytime you would like. And if you like to call back and promote something, or you know somebody that needs to be promoted, or you're trying to raise awareness for something, please come back on the show, like I said, anytime you'd like.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I definitely will. And let me just say, because I always forget, I have a friend who's a publicist who's like, what's wrong with you? People can find me at danceswithfat.org. And I do have a book that's called Fat, the Owner's Manual, and they can get that on the website. There's a hard copy of the e-book. Is Name Your Own Price, if people are financially not able to do the hardcover or whatever. But danceswithfat.org is my blog, and I blog almost every day, so people are welcome to come and interact with me there as well. Thank you so much for having me on the show and for having the show and an opportunity to talk about these things. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. I'll make sure I put it on my Facebook page. Is that okay?
That will be awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. I'll post a link on my Facebook page, and next time I talk to you, you should be sounding off.
I'm excited about it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Whew. You've heard it first on Sign Off Forums. I think we're on a move here. I think we're really on the movement here. The reason why I say that is because let's see, somebody called in, did they? Let me call this person back because let's see here. That is the Louisiana area code. Okay, so I will be calling this person back. I'll be calling this person back, get him back online. We'll take a short minute break, and I'll get right back to you.
As you may know, we got policies here, man. Anytime MC set to the mic, you gotta catch records for the Raps, DJ Revolution, Carmelita, Swayo King Tech, and the Raps is coming down hard in the new millennium, C-Lo. You ain't been here yet.
I know something.
You forgot, you know. You ready?
Can I do a piece of poetry or something?
Yeah.
Turn my mic on.
Turn your mic on.
Hello?
Can you hear?
Yeah. In the beginning there was none other than the original people, skin blackened from the sun. But somewhere along the line I broke the laws of the divine, and a curse placed on the soul of mine. Hell became the color of my face, feeling out of place amongst the people of my race. Filled with hate, I moved to a colder climate, intercourse with animals and raw flesh with AIDS. Filth and disease, sub-zero degrees, the Satan's blood in my veins didn't freeze. The hatred that I have for you, it runs deeper than your skin. I hate the one who put me in this position that I'm in, until I realize the powers of evil. Anything I have to do, I will. I steal, kill, and destroy. Went home to Africa looking for slaves to employ. Blue eyes and a smile was my only decoy. Snatch you up from your roots. What good is the spirit when I have this new invention that you brought you here then deceived you? I change and rearrange everything that you have ever believed true. My soul is cold as ice is. I sold you for prices. You were hung from trees for sacrifices. But through the blood, sweat, tears, and pain, God's spirit and y'all still remain. Which is actually more than I got. But I have a mansion and a yacht. The plot is making you think that it's about what it's not. With precision, I tell you lies through television. Distortion religion, wrap you up in materialism. yourself. How could you kill your own? Don't you see? You're learning to act just like me. But be more aware that the truth is there. I tell you all the time, but you ears don't care. But not all of you. There are a few that get into themselves and books on shelves and learn something new. And once they know, they become so powerful. But many don't have the means nor the inspiration to go to school. And I know they hate it, but you can't get a decent job unless you're properly educated. But educated about what? It seems to me that thus far, you've only learned about who we are. Isn't that funny? You'll give a school all your money for what you think you need, but it's never guaranteed. The misled mislead you. Your faith has been broken, provoking you to do whatever will feed you. Well, I thought you some cook cocaine and plain plastic sacks to sell to your fellow blacks. But why the foundation of your people cracks? You try to resist, but I won't stop until you don't exist. Strong though, I give you that. But you must be stupid as hell to be that strong and still be where you at. And you still don't have a clue. I am who I am because of love like you.
Oh, what's going on? Michael Clark, where are you from?
How you going? I'm from Australia.
What's going on? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Welcome to Sound Off Farms. What you got?
I just wanted to share some latest music revelations with you.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I was reading the Book of Jamal the other day, and there was a lot of awesome rappers and stuff in there. And I was listening to a lot of Nas and a lot of, you know, old school, like, old Ice Cube from the 90s, you know, it was all in the Book of Jamal. And it was really awesome, you know, it brought me back in time to when music was good, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I just wanted to say one more thing. I was actually, I was out in LA a couple of years ago, and I saw Lil Wayne, and I went up to him, and I tried to get his autograph, and he just turned around, and he was like, "What the fuck did you just fucking say about me, you little bitch? I'll have you know I graduated top of my class in the Navy SEALs, and I've been involved in numerous secret raids on Al-Qaeda, and I have over 300 confirmed kills. You are nothing to me but just another target. I'll wipe you the fuck out with precision, the likes of which has never been seen before on this earth. Mark my fucking words. You think you can get away with saying that shit to me over the internet? Think again, fucker. As we speak, I'm contacting my secret network of spies across the USA, and your IP is being traced right now, so you better prepare for the storm, maggot. The storm that wipes out the pathetic little thing you call your life. You're fucking dead, kid. I can be anywhere, anytime, and I can kill you in over 700 ways, and that's just with my bare hands. Not only am I extensively trained in unarmed combat, but I have access to the entire arsenal of the United States Marine Corps, and I will use it to its full extent to wipe your miserable ass off the face of the continent, you little shit. If only you could have known what unholy retribution your little clever comment was about to bring down upon you, maybe you would have held your fucking tongue, but you couldn't, you didn't, and now you're paying the price, you goddamn idiot. I will shit fury all over you, and you will drown in it. You're fucking dead, kiddo.
Hey, that's pretty good. Is that all you got? All right. Hello, Carla. How you doing? Can you say your name?
How's everything?
Can you say your name? Where you from?
Sure. My name is Richard, and I am from Virginia.
You're from where?
Virginia. Richard from Virginia.
Okay, go ahead.
Right. I wanted to talk about a thing that's been bothering me lately. Lately, I've been having dreams that I can't really explain. It's like Hitler.
I can't hear you.
He's putting his tongue in my anus, and I don't know why Hitler's doing that in my dreams. And I also wanted to know how come there was so many, sometimes in politics, Obama is seen praising Hitler, and Obama wants to be like Hitler. Also, there's many other things because I want to know why Hitler despised niggers. I also feel that, that's it. I appreciate you for letting me talk a lot, but if you don't mind, I have to go get my anus tongue by a nigger. Obama collects Nazi memorabilia, so I don't just want you to know that. And also that chimichangas.
All right, so they're obviously cyber pirates out there who like to just do nothing but hang out in chat rooms and, you know, do some weird stuff. But hey, you know, it's whatever. I don't, you know what I mean? This is sound off forums. You get what you get. I'm not sitting here and saying all those dudes were weird and they're crazy. You know, if that's how they want to be, that's them. I ain't got nothing wrong with them. They can go out and they can say what they want to say. That's what sound off forums is about. I mean, listen, I got some great listeners. So I'm not really concerned or worried about anything that comes on this show because I know the Lord that I serve. Okay, so let me read this to you because I was looking for it yesterday. And it comes from 2 Corinthians 11. Okay, it says, I repeat, let no one take me for a fool. But if you do, then tolerate me just because as you would be a fool so that I may do a little boasting. In this self-confidence boasting, I am not talking as the Lord would, but as a fool. Since many of our boasting in the way of the world does, I too will boast. You gladly put up with fools since you are so wise. In fact, you even put up with anyone who enslaves you or exploits you or takes you advantage of you or puts you in the errors or cracked or slaps you in the face. To my shame, I admit that we were too weak for that. Whatsoever anyone else dared to boast about, I am speaking as a fool. I also dared to boast about it. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I am of the mind to talk like this. I am more. I have worked more harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus 1. 3 times I was beaten with a rod. Once I was piled with stones. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and day in open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I have been in danger more in rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from the fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the county, in danger in the seas, in danger in false believers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger. I have known thirst. I have been without food. I have been cold, I have been naked, and besides everything else, I have faced daily of the pressure of my concerns of all of the churches. Who is weak? And I do not feel weak. Who leads into sin? And I do not inward burn. If I must boast, I will boast of things that show my weakness. The Lord God and Father Jesus Christ, who is the prayer forever, knows that I am lying. In Damascus, the governor under King Herod had the city of Damascus guards in order to arrest me. But I was lured in a basket from the window in the wall and slid out his hands. And so that's why I say to you, that don't worry about things like that, people. We're going to take some callers, though. We'll take some callers. Here we go. Caller, can you please say where you're from? Hello? Caller, can you please say where you're from? Name? Okay. Hello, caller, can you say where you're from? Your name?
Yes, my name is James Russell, and I'm from Bikini Bottom. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
No.
Oh, well, I am.
Oh, hold on. We got another caller. Caller?
Hello?
Caller, can you please say your name and where you're from?
My name is James Russell, and I'm from Bikini Bottom.
Okay. Hold on. We got another caller. Caller, can you say your name and where you're from?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You have to be more specific. Okay. I'm from the United States.
All right, you guys are on the air. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Say what you're going to say.
Can you hear me? I can't hear anyone over the music in the background. It's kind of rustling my jimmies.
I think you're a nigger. I'm going to play this song again.
Hey, don't call me that. Hey, man, I don't like that. I don't even know if
I'm
still in here.
How are you, Jimmy Russell?
Do y'all have anything to say? I'm waiting for y'all to say.
I want you to know that you're a nigger and listen to the song.
Is that supposed to hurt my feelings?
Let you down. Sorry, I'm just applying some chapstick. One moment,
okay,
please.
God bless you. I appreciate
Excuse
that.
Excuse me, can I apply my chapstick real quick?
Go ahead, do it.
Okay.
Appreciate these nuts and listen to this.
Count it.
Sorry, I have big nigger lips, so it might take a second.
Hey, well, you just go ahead and apply them and you keep on rubbing on them. So, Carla, how you doing? Can you please say your name and where you're from?
I need to apply my chapstick. Hold on. Read this message.
Hello?
I'm waiting for y'all to say something. Y'all got 2 seconds to gotta say. I'm waiting.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm waiting.
Can you hear
me? Wait.
There's five of you on the telephone right now.
I can
know
that you're a nigger.
Hello? Hey. Do you have any lettuce?
You're a nigger. Hold this phone. Play this phone,
plans?
Nigger.
Hello?
You know what? I got a question
Hello?
For you guys.
Hello?
Plants.
Hello?
Hello? Hey.
It's like
Hello?
Anime.
Hello?
This is my fault.
Hello?
Because you're Hitler. Hitler.
Hello?
Hitler.
Do you have any plans?
Hitler.
Me upset.
Hello?
Like anime. Making me upset.
Nigger. Hello?
Nigger.
What? G, baby.
Hello? Nigger.
Hitler, nigger.
Hello?
Hitler, nigger.
Hello?
Nigger.
Hello?
Okay. I'm gonna take you off. I'm waiting for some. Wait for you guys to talk. You can say that all you want, but you know. All right. So anyway, I'm not gonna entertain it. It's just if they want to act ignorant, then you know, then that's them. I mean, a bunch of young kids anyway. So basically, what the sign off forms is I'm not afraid or being worried about these callers because sign off form is about putting your number out there and you call it. Now, I'm sure these are kids, but I'm not going to even speak about that. So we're going to move on. Say something positive. So Ms. Reagan was so polite of coming on the show and giving us these great ideas of what we should do and what we shouldn't do, and how can we change the perception of the bigotry between being healthy and fit and actually the appearance of being fat. And there's so much that can be said and so much that can be done that we have to actually just take action. Because there's a difference between taking action and just being dormant. Okay? We can't no longer be dormant. We can no longer be ignorant to the fact that we can just let things go. We've got to stand up and fight. And I know a lot of people, you know, that listen to my show don't understand about sizeism because they probably are not big and they don't understand all that kind of stuff. But as you get older, you develop health problems. These health problems are something that everyone will eventually happen to them, okay? And it may be anything, but you have to understand when you get to a point where you can't take care of yourself and you're unable to be functional in a society, then you're no longer relevant. Okay? As an individual with only one state of power, that's the voting power that they've given us, when you become sick, the right of being free-willed and free-minded has been limited to your physical ability. Now, you may say, well, that would never happen to me. Well, you don't know that because you're not guaranteed for tomorrow. So my point is this. Things that happen because based off of bigotry and ignorance, of course, is nothing but the work of the devil. Okay, we've got a caller. Here we go. We got a caller. Here we go. Hello, caller.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello?
All right, we've got a caller. Caller,
hello?
Caller, can you tell me where you're from and your name, please?
Lake Charles.
Yep.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me, George?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hold on a minute, man. I got to get this thing. Yeah, man, I heard what was going on a minute ago, man. I mean, but you know the deal, man. You know, it's a lot of. Hello?
Hello, I hear you. Go ahead, keep talking.
Okay, because I hear a lady speaking on your show right now, and I'm speaking.
Oh, that's only because
anyway,
it's a delay.
Anyway, man, I'm just letting you know, man, it's a lot of evil in the world, man, and you're speaking a lot of positive things, you know, so you gotta know you're going to come under attack, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, and them guys, I heard all this, everything they were saying, I could hear it on my phone, man. It's just, you know, demons work through a lot of people, man, and, I mean, you can clearly see that they were under some kind of influence tonight. So, man, just don't keep doing what you're doing, man, because just as well as good, they got evil. So we got to get more people that's good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, man.
All right. God bless. So, as these spirits, these demonic spirits go, as the caller said, listen, you've got to understand when you start doing good, the devil's going to attack you somehow, some way. And that's why I keep reiterating these things to these people is because you've got to understand the intelligence of the devil is more superior than any human being on this planet. And if you think that he cannot attack you through the flesh and you're not strong enough, then you've got to go back and read your Bible. You need to pull out your survival toolkits. Okay? All right, we got two callers. Let's see what they got. All right, caller, go ahead. Where are you from? Your name, please.
Who, me?
Yes.
Yes, me.
All right, Mr. Russells. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Hi, I just wanted to say that last caller was a dirty fucking nigger, and I don't think he should be fucking doing, telling anybody what to fucking do. Fuck him. Fuck you. Fuck this whole show. Fuck the program. Fuck the Jews. Fuck the Muslims. Fuck the niggers. Fuck you. Hitler was a god who did nothing wrong. Everybody can suck my dick. You can suck my dick. Shrek can.
All right, so I will not be taking any more callers because all that foul language is not necessarily, and it's not appealing to my listeners. So I'm open to a lot of stuff, but what I'm not open to is a lot of ignorance. And you can call me nigger all day, every day. That's not gonna make me feel bad. But I'm telling you, my people, you see what I'm saying? And if you if you are a regular listener to this show, you can see the demonic spirits at work. You can't tell me that I'm not under. See, now you hear the callers call in, or you see the chat in the chat room, and you say, well, there's some young people that are calling in, and that's true, but that's on the physical plane. You don't understand. There's demons that have taken control of their minds to call in and do that. Now, do you want to listen to a show of truth, or do you want to listen to a show with a bunch of garbage? See, the devil don't want the truth to be out there. They want you to be ignorant. They don't want the deception to be uprooted. And I thank Russell for calling in and telling me. I like him saying that he hates everybody. Niggers, Jews, all of them. It is the innate abilities of people who do not stand that will tolerate this. So I want you. This is recorded, people. I can play this back until the day I die or when the internet goes off. You know why? Because you telling me that racism has gone away? Come on now. Has racism gone away? I'm asking you. Listen to this back. Listen back to it. Racism has not gone away. The man was from Australia. Whether he was from Australia or not, it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is racism is still here. I have done nothing wrong but speak the truth. But when truth is spoke, it is tried to be deflated by the negativity of the evil one. Listen, I know I shouldn't be quoting Puff Daddy, but I say this, them haters can't hold me down. Oh no, I've got to keep it moving. Yes, I've got to keep it moving, because I know the truth. Satan, hit me with your best shot, buddy. Come on. I love my listeners. I love it. I love them. I love you. Let me read you the thing about faith. Okay? Because I need people who understand what I go through, you see. Because obviously, there are people who don't understand what I'm going through, because they think I'm playing around and this has nothing to do with nothing. Okay, but let me surely show you and tell you that faith is based off of what the devil don't want you to have. Okay? Faith is what the devil do not want you to have. He don't want you to give God glory. He wants you to get upset. See, stuff like that don't upset me. Come on, man. Are you serious? That dumb little ignorant little boys except trying to upset me? With that kind of foolishness? I call it foolishness. Because it has no validity. It has no weight on it. None. Not at all. Faith is considered the confinement and the truth in the person or things or the deity or the doctrine or the teaching of a religion. And I know that love conquers all. So this is going to be Hebrews 11, New International Version. It says, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and to assure above what is we have not seen. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By the faith of Abraham, when called to go to the place he would later receive his inheritance, obedience, and went even through, did not know where he was going. By faith he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents and did Isaac and Jacob, who were their heirs. All things people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them for the distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers of the earth. And what more shall I say? I do not have more time to tell you about Gideon, Becca, Samson, Japhiah, and David, Samuel, and the prophets, who their faith conquest kingdoms. The minister of justice. Game, what is the purpose? Shut mouths of lions. Quench the furnace of the fires. Escape the edge of swords. Weakness was turned into strength. Became powerful in battle and routed foreign enemies. Women received back their dead. Rose from life again. There were others who were tormented, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. So face jollies and froggings, and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stone. They were sawed into two. They were killed by the sword. They went by the sheepskin and goatskins, the deceptions, the persecutions, the mistrust. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered the deserts and the mountains and lived in caves and in the holes of the ground. These are all commanded for their faith, yet none of them received what they have been promised, since God had planned something better for them, so they only together with us, we would be made perfect. We got a call. All right, caller, real quick. You got 2 seconds.